This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, Brian Fernandez, Kusu Chuang, myself, Sharad Kusum, the top business stories beyond frivolous matters. I don't know. Is this a question of Irish stew trumping nasi lemak? Question well put to all of us right now. On Tuesday, reports surfaced that Malaysian CEO Peter Bellew will be leaving the national carrier to rejoin Ryanair as its COO. Bellew is the third CEO to leave the airline since 2014. He's referred to some sort of national service, Irish national service, that is, in making a choice to leave. But this comes 3 weeks after he said he wasn't going to leave. So did the nasi lemak turn sour for him?
I don't know, Sharad. But the board of directors, as well as MAS, are quite nonplussed. In fact, they don't know what's going on. They actually learned, as we did, about his departure from the Irish Times and the mandatory stock exchange filings from the New York Stock Exchange. So it comes as a bit of a bolt from the blue. And I think maybe, possibly, Michael O'Leary, the Ryanair CEO, would have called Peter Bellew and said, hey, mate, come and help us out because we're in a world of pain. They've had massive pilot strikes in Ireland, and Ryanair has actually stranded 750,000 people. Pilots are, down tools because they have been protesting roster problems in Ireland, in Ryanair.
Yeah, so there's something in the region of 20,000 flights were cancelled last month and disrupted 750,000 people. So the scale of the problem at problems at Ryanair are quite significant. And apparently, for the winter, they don't have enough pilots. Domestic links from Stansted to Edinburgh and Glasgow and between Gatwick and Belfast have been cut because they just don't have enough pilots.
Yeah, but that's by the by, right? And that's Ryanair. I mean, he's the CEO of Malaysian Airlines, and he was hired. He said he made a commitment to the organisation. And if he wanted to leave to help out Ryanair, why couldn't it be done in a kind of normal timetable? Why didn't he inform the board? Why are the people in charge and own Malaysian Airlines in the dark about this? And it seems really odd.
It seems very, very odd, particularly because he's joining Ryanair on the 1st of December. That's about a month away. Essentially, that's very, very unusual for a person of that seniority, especially as a C-level position, where normally you would have anything between 6 months and 12 months in terms of notice or gardening leave that you have as part of your contract. So this obviously rings a lot of alarm bells, especially since he is, after all, the third CEO in MAS last 3 years.
Both him and Khazana have made quite a standard statement saying that there's been no interference and everything's all hunky-dory. But what we do know is a few weeks ago, the Prime Minister went to New York, went to America. And
to Washington, D.C.
Correct, Washington, and announced plane purchases. And not a few, 25, I think, Dreamliners and quite a lot of other Boeing aircraft. So apparently Peter Bellew did not know or reportedly did not know about these purchases. So, I mean, there probably is more to it than meets the eye. But it does send all kind of wrong signals because MAS has also seen the quite abrupt departure of Christoph Mueller, the preceding CEO to Peter Bellew.
But the question is, will this affect a brand Malaysia Airlines? Is this something that only investors be concerned about, or will it will it have any kind of knock-on effect in terms of consumer sentiment or towards the airline?
Well, first of all, from an investor's perspective, it doesn't make any difference.
There's only one, right?
Yeah, there's only one. It's Khazana. Yeah. So that doesn't matter. From a brand perspective,
Khazana, for sure.
And it also, because they had this plan to relist Malaysian Airlines, right, in 2019 or something. About this.
So, yes, Sharad. But however, I think at the end of the day, come 2019, what investors will be looking for is, what are the numbers? Is it profitable? How profitable is it? Is this a long-term growth story? That's all they're going to be interested in.
But a long-term growth story is also linked to leadership, right? I mean, if you don't have good leaders and your leaders are constantly changing, the instability, surely that's going to impact your long-term growth story or your confidence that people have that that you can deliver on your aspirations.
No, of course. And I think one of the things now that the board must be looking at is really about how do we bring stability at the top of the leadership. And because Peter Bellew is leaving with such short notice, I mean, I would think that if I was a board member on the board, I would say, let's appoint somebody internal who's been working with Bellew and Mueller, who knows the plan, they stick to the plan, and MAS will turn around. Rather than bringing somebody from the outside, that has no industry experience.
Well, the shortlist is actually quite long. You've got the CFO, Omar Siddiq, in the running.
This is not an official shortlist. No, this is speculation.
The mooted shortlist. You've got the MAS COO, Captain Izam Ismail. You've also got the MRT Corp. Those are the internal guys. And then the external guys are the boss of MRT Corp, Dato' Sharyal as well. The former, Dato' Azhar Abdul Hamid is also in there. The Aero Direct Services CEO, Nazirudin Basri, is also in there. So there's quite a lot of people that are being mooted, and all of them, obviously, local Malaysians.
So the idea is, if this happens, are we looking at... I mean, if these people were good enough to be CEO, why weren't they chosen in the past? Are we moving...
I think initially, the foreign names were interesting because there were a lot of jobs culling to be done, and you needed someone savage, someone external, someone with the temerity to have, and the personality to see it through.
Like a fall guy, you mean?
In a way.
Well, in a way, yes.
From that perspective... And Christoph Müller, he was known as Le Cost, he was
known as... Well, that's Carlos Ghosn,
Le Cost. Well, that's Carlos Ghosn, yeah. Le Cost Killer. But yeah, so it'd be what it'd be, I guess.
Okay, moving on, continuing on this transport theme, Prime Minister Najib Razak has unveiled the concept designs for the 7 new stations along the Kuala Lumpur-Singapore high-speed rail. He said the designs reflect a strong Malaysian identity and heritage while remaining modern and futuristic. The land acquisition process for the high-speed rail has also begun with a 3-month public consultation period for Malaysians to give feedback or raise concerns over the project. I don't know if you guys have seen this track. I mean, does it run along the existing KTM line, or is it a completely new trajectory for this coming from, I think, emanating from Jurong or ending in Jurong, depending how you look at it?
Yeah, so it starts off in Jurong and then it ends basically in Bandar, Malaysia. And along the way, you have stations in Iskandar Putri. You've got a station in Batu Pahat, in Muar, Melaka, Seremban and Putrajaya. So I think in terms of alignment, it may be
completely different from the KTM.
Completely different from the existing line. But interestingly enough, one of the key proponents of this project is, besides the fact that or key advantages that they are marketing and highlighting, besides the increased connectivity between Singapore and Malaysia, is also the fact that there should be multiplier effects from these stations itself.
Absolutely, from F&B to hotels to restaurants to retail to hospitality to property construction, there's huge multiplier effects. And the thing is,
I must say, every time I hear the word multiplier effect, I cringe, because this is always said about every big mega project,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, it's a favorite Malaysian term.
No, it's global. I mean, look at cities that bid for the Olympics. Every government justifies a huge spending by saying there's multiplier effects. The multiplier effects don't last that long, and eventually they're white elephants and they decay.
Yes,
that's the Olympic stadium
in Greece, right?
Yeah,
that's everywhere.
But I think stations are very, very different. I mean, because there's always a huge confluence of people coming through those stations. I think in this particular case, everybody agrees that the MRT in Malaysia, in KL, is very well done. The problem is the amount of money we spend on it and how much is leaked out through interested parties, which is the issue. I mean, people don't discount the high-speed railway as, going to be a white elephant necessarily. It's going to be very, very good for the economies of both Singapore and Malaysia. It's the cost we're paying and the amount of leakages that are potentially in line.
And Chuang, and that's a very good point, because the original estimate when YTL in 2006 put the proposal down for high-speed rail from Singapore to Malaysia, I think that was just over 5 billion ringgit.
And today?
Today, it's well over 50 billion ringgit.
Yeah, so it's 10 times
that,
right?
So then the other thing is, how many people have to travel and use these services for it to be a going concern, right? Because it's got to be there's a business proposition underscoring
this. Absolutely.
Right? So the question is, in terms of traffic between Kuala Lumpur and Singapore, how much of it is that going to grow? And how much of that cake do they have to eat into the detriment of, the planes and the other buses and such?
The KL-Singapore route is one of the most lucrative and most highly frequented in ASEAN, for sure. And if you have a viable train route which will basically take you from city to city right to the hub of the area, why not? And you know, if you're a business user, that would be the first, you know, a default choice, but not the airline.
But Chuang, the business user cannot be the business model for this business.
Mass. Well, it will be both obviously the holiday goer and the business user. But you know, the proposition for a 90-minute commute from KL to Singapore, when you go into each respective city, and you can sit down and do your work in basically quite, you know, peaceful surroundings and reply your emails and do your thinking, have your discussions, it is quite literally unbeatable. The things will be the cost and the convenience.
Yeah, so Chuang, yes, you're right. It's a compelling value proposition if you can get to point to point in 90 minutes. But the key thing is there'll be different types of services. There'll be point to point services, so Bandar Malaysia to Jurong East, for example, and that's probably the 90 minute
which
service.
Is like your KL Central to KLIA 2, right? Direct.
Correct.
Or you can do the multiple ones.
But then here, you're talking about adding various stations along the way. That would be a different service.
There'll probably be both.
Yeah, so that would be a different price point as well. Otherwise, my concern is the business model will fail.
Well, we wait to see how this all pans out. Very quickly, switching from trains to gloves, the market is expecting a $1 billion acquisition from the world's largest rubber glove company, Top Glove. Its chairman, Tan Sri Lim Wee Chai, says that they'll be announcing it within a month.
Yeah, he says he's 99% sure of the acquisition, about ₱1 billion, which is something well within their, I think, affordability. They've got something like ₱94 million in cash and, you know, a whole bunch of headroom to borrow.
What are they buying?
They'd probably be buying a Malaysia domestic-based glove maker as well, I think, to boost production capacity as well as market share. They've already got 25% market share in the world, not Malaysia, the world, okay?
Who is it likely to be? Because at that level, I mean, are there that many other players?
Fingers do the walking and I couldn't find out. There's only a few, right?
But they've already made some acquisitions anyway recently, right? They bought Eastern Press Sdn Bhd, which is a major supplier of packaging material to the group, for $47 million in cash. And it came with a profit guarantee of $4.5 million for the next financial
year. That's right. And 5-6% of their cost is actually packaging. So, you know, they're obviously taking charge of their value chain. They also bought two small glove plants earlier this year in May, I think for about ₱40 million cash. They were related party transactions because they belonged to the chairman's brother, but it was actually quite a fair price. So the market's taken that quite satisfactorily as well.
So those numbers are quite small compared to this $1 billion. $1 billion suggests something quite large.
A billion ringgit. You'd have to imagine it's going to be quite profit accretive because it will come with a whole bunch of revenue and profits as well.
Okay, we're heading up to the 9 o'clock bulletin, and after that we'll be back with the opening numbers in the stock market and more analysis for you. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.